The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And it is the Pat Kenny Show with Anton in for Pat. With me is Joe Neville, Fine Gael TD for Kildare North, Sinead Gibney, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Rathdown, and Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter for the Irish Independent. And as today's Friday forum, there is much to discuss, ranging from the latest wrinkles in the housing crisis through to the situation in Gaza, and of course that epic spat between billionaire and President Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Before that, good domestic news, which is that childcare fees are to be capped for those paying top rates. That's going to be from September, and that's according to a piece written by Tabitha Monaghan, who can therefore do the heavy lifting of giving us the details. Tabitha, this is top fees being capped rather than all, isn't that right?
Yes, well, I suppose it is just a maximum fee cap that's being imposed. So yes, it is good news, but it's not necessarily good news for everybody who's going to see all of their fees reduced. It's like you said, it's just those who are paying the top rates across the country. So like you said, that is going to be coming in from September this year for the 2025-2026 year. It is going to be capped at €295 a week. That's kind of trying to bring it closer to the average childcare fee that people are paying per week, which is about €197. So that's the first part of it, which is the maximum fee cap. But then on top of that, parents will still be entitled to the National Childcare Scheme subsidy, which is €96.30 per week, which therefore, if anybody's able to do quick maths in their head, will bring it down to €197.80 per week. So it is reducing it for those people paying the top rates by about €100. I think some cases €188, according to figures from the department.
It's still a long way from the, €200 a month promise?
Yes, and that was something that we were at when the Minister, Norma Foley, the Children's Minister, was announcing this yesterday. It was something that did come up at that doorstep, was that we are an awful long way away from that commitment. That was a big part of the election campaign, and it is in the programme for government, which is that commitment of €200 per month per child. So we're still an awful long way. What the minister said was that it's still an absolute goal of the government to be able to do that, to reduce it down, but that it was going to be over the lifetime of the government, which is obviously 5 years, and that it's going to be incremental. So this is just part of it.
And presumably, Joe Neville, this comes with that the sort of the regular question about do those who at the wealthier end of the spectrum benefit therefore from subsidies from those at the poorer end? If it is the most expensive childcare that is being capped, would that suggest that it is people who are living in the most affluent areas who are actually benefiting from this?
No. The answer to that is a direct no, because often it's the newer services that actually are the most expensive. So newer services can go up in any different area. It's not necessarily related to where they live. So you can have a new crash. We just picked Dunshaughlin, or no richer, no poorer than any other place. But Dunshaughlin, new crash is put in, or leaks up per minute, and because it's new, the fees might be higher. So actually, what this is, often it's actually the struggling, the couple into a new housing estate. It's those sort of people. So the people who the struggling classes, who are trying to pay them mortgage and whatever else in a normal area. So it's not a wealth related item at all. If anything, it's the opposite.
What's your expectation as to when the €200 cap will finally arrive?
Look, can I just first say, childcare is the key issue, or one of the key issues that we have in North Kildare. Infrastructure is a key issue, but childcare is a key item, and it's an item that keeps coming up. So, and obviously the cost is one thing, but obviously the placing. So we need to actually build more childcare facilities as well, and that's another focus that we have. But I would say over the course of the lifetime of the government, to answer your direct question, it will be step by step, and obviously we've got 4 years to do that. But as just outlined, but that was it is a key item, key focus for the government, a key item in the programme for government. So I will be pushing for it, because I know there's a lot of young couples and people who are struggling. A lot of my friends, my brother's got 3 kids under 5. My kids are just slightly a bit older, but at the same time, so many of my peers struggling with childcare costs and even to get the facility. So it'll be a key focus for me, and indeed it's a key focus for the government.
Now, Sinead, what's the Social Democrats' policy in respect of the payment for childcare? Because even at the €200 aspiration by the end of the government, if you have 2 or 3 kids, that's a huge amount of money for families to find.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this does affect a very small number of people. Our policy, and we were the first to call for a public model of childcare through the election, and we suggested a cap of €250 per month. All of the parties followed, then bringing it to €200 a month. I mean, the issue that I would have is that there's no clarity over how we're going to get to this. I mean, that is the problem for me. And indeed, Fianna Fáil have kind of been a quite anti-public model of childcare, I would say. So it's quite nebulous, really, as to what it is going to be. I mean, they talk about estate-funded childcare, for example. But for me, there has to be a public model of childcare, there is a place for private providers within that. But what we've been calling for, my colleague Aidan Farrelly has been leading on this, is a version of sláinte care within the childcare space. So posture care is what we've labelled it. And what we want to see is an all-party Oireachtas committee set up, as sláinte care was, with a finite amount of time, to really get everybody around the table, get everybody in the room, all of the people involved, to really figure out how we can deliver. I mean, my daughter is 25 this year, and I was paying similar fees 25 years ago. And we have, like, as in old Irish pounds, it was nearly a grand a month for her childcare fees. And this is what parents are still facing with. Even now, though, it's even worse in terms of accessibility. In Dublin Rathdown, where I am, parents are just dealing with just an absolute scarcity of places, and they are in affluent areas. But the one thing I would say to your comment about that is, of course, those affluent areas are where the higher cost providers will be, but not everybody in an affluent area is affluent. And I think that's really important to mention when you talk about that kind of additional fee cap. And that's what we hear certainly from people in our constituency. So, I mean, you know, there have been successive governments who failed to deal with this. It is welcome to see a cap come in, but I really don't think this is going to scratch the surface barely. So I want to have clarity, and we want to have clarity as to how the government is going to get there.
There are two other parts of this as well, is that the fee freeze, which was brought in 2022, that's going to remain in place. And another part of the announcement yesterday was that the government is increasing the amount of core funding going to services by 60 million euro. And I think that's part of it. And Sinead did reference that in relation to access. And that's something that Norma Foley has brought up quite a lot, is that, you know, we, aside from dealing with the fee situation, it's also trying to find a place for your child. And I know, like, before I moved over to politics, we did a survey for the Irish Independent about access for childcare. And I was ringing creches asking, you know, how often or how easy is it is to get a child in. And I was saying, at one stage, one creche told me that they were only accepting children that were essentially hadn't been conceived yet. They were only taking places for that, which blew my mind as somebody who isn't a mother. So that's something that she definitely wants to tackle with that. Only 92% of childcare services are part of core funding. There was a little bit of controversy, but that some creches weren't happy remaining in core funding because their services, their costs were going up, and therefore because they were part of core funding and there was a freeze, that they had to withdraw from that. So I think there's a little bit of balance there to make sure that service providers are part of core funding as well.
Well, as to the accessibility, that goes to the issue of our capacity to build and provide a lot more than just accommodation for preschool kids, because we see today that news from the FOI put in by Sinn Féin revealing that there are 3,000 vacant homes, and that of those, one in four has been vacant for more than a 12-month period. Joe Neville, the Sinn Féin position on this is that it is an easy solution, that if the government provided centralised funding on a rolling 12-month basis to the local authorities, they could get these houses sorted and available for tenants. Why not do that?
Look, I was a councillor before as TD for many, many years, and you know, worked heavily in this space. Vacant homes, there shouldn't be any vacant homes. Fully accept that, fully agree with that. And a lot of work has been put in by the government to ensure that vacant homes can be improved and built up by the council. That has happened. There's been a lot of schemes to refurbish homes and the Críochana, multiple kind of schemes like that. So this has been a focus for the government, and we have seen improvements in the area. Local, we can, with the number of houses we've seen in North Kildare, there's been a significant number of houses built in my area, and I've been fully behind it. I've fully supported every new house build, probably unlike some councillors in other parties and other areas. So in North Kildare, we have had a significant amount of houses built. Obviously, around the rest of the other counties, we need more and more. But the vacant homes, 3,000, isn't going to solve our problem either. So we need to continue to focus on...
It's going to solve the problem for 3,000 families pretty quick.
Exactly. But at the same time, it's not good. It's a huge number of items we need to target. We need to target
vacant homes,
but what about the core Sinn Féin
assertion underpinning the discussion, which is that there is an €11,000 fund that is made available to the local authorities, but it is only available in the first half of the year. Therefore, if a house comes vacant after spring, they have to wait 9 months to reaccess the funding. Is that the case?
Well, we'll have to clarify that point on that specific item. But at the same time, with the local authorities have received significant funding to actually refurbish vacant homes. And we have seen a huge amount of work being put into that. I know my own council, Kildare County Council, have put a lot of work into vacant homes. And it's a key focus for us because, look, like that, we have seen houses in local authority housing estates. And indeed, you know, in ordinary housing estates where we've actually gone after them, we've CPO'd houses. And in fairness, the Kildare County Council, and I can only speak to my own personal experience, have been extremely reactive in that way. So I would actually say is that our local authorities are doing a great job. We have an excellent team in Kildare, and obviously I'm sure it's the same in other councils. So we've been very focused on that, and I believe that we will continue to do that. But as I said, the housing issue, you know, is something that we're continually focused on as a government. And I know there's been significant targets put in place, and we need to actually just continue to focus across a whole swathe of items to resolve it.
But those targets, you are a long way from achieving.
Yes. Oh, no, like there obviously we have the targets were missed last year, and there are difficult targets put in place. But we do know, though, that the houses obviously are needed. And as I said, we have seen some areas where we have succeeded. But at the same time, it is the significant issue in the country at the moment.
Sinead Gibney, do you see anything in current government action that would give you optimism in respect of housing? Because we see the figures today in relation to the 3,000 houses that are vacant. We see the difficulty that there is with connections to Irish Water and with connections to the electrical grid. We've seen the missed targets, and we've seen builders talking about how difficult it is to access capital and labour. None of it looks like momentum.
No, and I have no optimism based on any of the actions of this government. In fact, all I feel we get is just spin after spin and very little policy that is actually going to make a difference in this area. I mean, in terms of that investment in public infrastructure, which is increasingly exposing the government's weakness in terms of its targets. I mean, we know those targets aren't going to be met anyway. But the fact that we simply cannot supply any potential homes within 2 or 3 years at the moment, as it stands, with the water and electricity that we need in the Greater Dublin area is absolutely shocking. And of course, it fills you with despair that, I mean, you know, obviously this vacancy tax issue is, or the vacancy issue in social housing is an issue, but it is just such small fry compared to the just absolutely momentous crisis that we find ourselves in that this government has walked us into. I mean, we need, for example, when it comes to vacancy, we need to think about the fact that somebody's right to a house and a home has to trump speculation and profit making in the private sector. And that's essentially what happens. So vacancy tax, for example, in the private sector is just totally lacking teeth. Of course, those developers and those people who are making profits factor in the potential taxes that they're going to have to pay. So, I mean, you know, all over the place, we just see a reliance on the private sector to provide these solutions. And we, again, do not suggest that there isn't a place for the private sector to help with resolving the housing crisis. But there has to be state involvement, much heavier.
But presumably, even if there is state involvement, you face the same problem as the state as you do as a private developer, which is the people to actually build the houses. We're struggling to find them.
Yeah, absolutely. And even those people who can't, who we would like to bring to the country to help build the houses, can't get houses to stay here and live here while they build the houses. And I mean, the apprenticeship schemes and other initiatives like that are helpful. Absolutely. I think this what we're looking at, it's certainly in that Lorcan Sir piece in the Irish Times about the water shortages and the grid shortages. I mean, they to me speak to an absolute issue that we have with capital projects here in this country, and the fact that we're now dealing with a very finite set of resources to try and reach housing targets that are just, that there's no comparison. It's not going to happen.
View 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. Let's move to events across the Atlantic. Joe Neville, you were saying your phone lit up yesterday evening with news from America.
Yeah, no, I was just saying before we started, I was at an event last night, and it was one of those things, there were multiple tables, and all of a sudden, you know, those speeches being made, but kind of chatter, people started looking to their phones, and people were going from table to table, did you see that, did you see that, did you see the news? And it was like, obviously people were working back because they hadn't been focused on it, you know, for the previous hour, and all of a sudden kind of word spread, like, Musk is saying this, Trump is saying that, Musk is, you know, has seen the timeline. So look, it's an extraordinary situation. Extraordinary international situation. You know, you obviously the elected president, and ultimately Donald Trump is the elected president, and I suppose we have to be conscious of that and everything that we, you know, we say and how we think and how we comment about it, because that's such an important, probably the most important single job in the world. And, you know, and obviously Elon Musk, you know, the richest man in the world, although he's probably a little less rich this morning once the Tesla shares price drops, so we can see that'll be the impact for him. And ultimately you've got two men who were in very strong positions and ultimately, you know, came together for a certain period of time. It worked to both people's advantage for a period of time. So now we have to see the fallout when the troubled relationship now breaks down.
Well, Tabitha, whatever about the reality show elements of the way the relationship is breaking down, we have a situation now where the President of the United States is launching attacks on one of the biggest aerospace contractors of the US government. And that contractor is calling the American president, calling for the American president to be impeached. I mean, this is completely off the reservation.
It is, but I wonder sometimes people say, like, it is an extraordinary thing to happen, and I think it is to some extent surprising, especially at how it's playing out. Like, the ultimate bromance over in the States at the moment is crashing and burning before our eyes at the moment. Are we overly surprised? Like Joe said, like, they were two very strong personalities that were trying to do a job, and like he said, you know, it did work to their advantage, particularly during the election. Like, Elon Musk funded a huge proportion of Donald Trump's campaign, millions and millions of dollars,
270 something million dollars,
a huge amount of money. And but again, it did benefit Elon Musk until it didn't, and I think that's where this row is centering at the moment, is the big beautiful bill that he's trying to get through at the moment, Donald Trump's trying to get through, and this argument over why Elon Musk is pushing back against it now, say, basically calling for that bill to be scrapped, because what is suspected is over these EV tax breaks, the removal of that. I think Joe Biden brought it in, and now the Trump administration is trying to remove it. That is going to impact Elon Musk and his business, obviously, with Tesla. And like Joe said, Tesla shares, I think they were down 14%, a market value of $150 billion on Thursday. So we can see that when someone like Elon Musk goes against the US administration, that how that can impact him. But similarly, Elon Musk is the wealthiest man in the world, but also does have a huge amount of influence and does have a very significant following and owns X, which a lot of people are still using. So I'd be interested to see how this plays out further down the line as Elon Musk continues to go against Trump.
And he has made that very clear. He made a comment suggesting Donald Trump is going to be around for 3.5 years. He's going to be around for 40, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the crash of the bromance is one thing, but the legacy and consequence of that is something that we are all dealing with, because Elon Musk during the election essentially manipulated his own platform to assist the Republican Party in electing.
And is taking credit for it currently, saying Donald Trump would not have been elected but for me.
Exactly. I mean, you know, so I think there's huge issues there in terms of what that means for democracy in America and across the world, and what it means for social media. So those are the things I'll be keeping an eye on. But you have to remember, of course, and I think some of us kind of forget quite easily, the first term and the conveyor belt of people that Donald Trump ran through in his first term. So, I mean, we've had a few months of, you know, sweetness and light. And now I guarantee you we'll see crash after crash after crash. Like, you remember Scaramucci in his 11-day reign as, what was he, White House press spokesperson? So, I mean, I had no doubt, and I don't think many people did, that Musk and Trump as two ego-driven, self-enriching characters in these roles were always going to collide and it would fall apart.
Was there something particularly questionable about this, though? Because at least in the Scaramucci era or the Rex Tillerson era, these were appointees to standard cabinet positions who were then subsequently dismissed. This was a man who maintained significant businesses that receive huge amounts of federal contracts and was put in a position of oversight over the agencies providing those contracts to him.
Exactly. The conflicts were out the wazoo, and he had his little band of tech bros who were harvesting information about American citizens and employees in the federal administration. And all of that has still happened. I mean, they've lost 10,000 employees. I saw a headline yesterday that the cuts that DOGE introduced to USAID that Elon Musk himself is responsible for could potentially be connected to 300,000 deaths on our globe. I mean, USAID just seems to have been lost in the whole story of all of the cuts that have gone on in America. So, like, the repercussions of this are just ginormous. And yeah, he is a different beast. And I think he will be an absolute thorn in Trump's side now. It's going to be, it is entertaining. Absolutely. I mean, it's not enjoyable because it's so serious, but it is entertaining to see it.
I remember a long time ago, Joan Neville, a headline in, was the Sunday Independent, Payback Time, Tony O'Reilly's take on what was due for Fine Gael. That was one media mogul owning one newspaper group. Is Trump now in the same position? Has he finally picked a fight with somebody who can do him real harm?
Yeah, look, and it's funny, I was thinking about that in the way in this morning. I was thinking about, like, I suppose this is an old tale. This is the tale that probably happened, you know, has always happened with politicians and press, you know, and those relationships that can happen in, you know, we've seen in America, there's been movies made out of such things like the likes of Citizen Kane and everything else, the demagoguery associated with people in significant press positions and ultimately the power they get. So they want to use that power, and they can use it in a positive way. But obviously that very same power, you know, to support someone, that very same power can be used against that person after. So I suppose that's the Sinead's point. You know, it's fascinating, but at the same time, it's not fun either, because you realise the seriousness and the importance of it. Because ultimately, America, whether, you know, whether so everyone agrees with me, you know, has been a force for good in the world over the last 60, 70 years. Since I was a child, America was seen as the positive place. That's changed in the last few years, and especially in the last number of months. And this, you know, doesn't help it and just continues to add to it. And then I suppose ultimately it's a scary place for the world where you've got two individuals like this who are so powerful and can actually cause, you know, such damage, I suppose, in real time. And ultimately, while I was, you know, at the outset when I first said, like, there was that element of, you know, shock everyone going, what's happening? The reaction is because it's so important, and in fairness, the impact, but we just don't know what it'll be just yet.
And even it sucks oxygen from other much more significant issues. We were speaking earlier on, Tabitha, about the situation in Gaza, and our guest was suggesting that until the US intervenes and says to Israel, you need to solve the humanitarian crisis and you need to do a deal, nothing will happen. Presumably this kind of stuff further delays anything like that, if it was ever going to happen.
It does. And I think, like you said, there is an acknowledgement that the US really will have to get involved in order to help anything that's happening in the Middle East at the moment. But I think a lot of people at the moment are very focused on the lack of aid that is getting to Palestinians into Gaza, the Gaza Strip at the moment. We have this group, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, who have now resumed distributing aid. They had paused aid there, I think it was on Wednesday, because there was a lot of Palestinians who were trying to receive aid were shot when they were trying to access this aid. I think 27 people died as a result of that. So there's that situation going on. But then similarly, then we have a lot of aid that is trapped on the borders of Egypt and Jordan that actually just cannot access. I don't know if anybody saw, there was a video that went around. It was a UN worker and she was in Jordan and she was in a warehouse and she was filming in the warehouse and it was chocker full of aid. And she was like, we cannot get this into our warehouses in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip. We're blocked because of the restrictions that are in the border. And I just think we see the horrific scenes of people trying to access aid when they're clambering over each other to share out the very minimal amount of food that there is in there at the moment. And then you see these warehouses that are full of medicine and food and other supports, that blankets even, that they need. And to see it just sitting there waiting is so deeply frustrating.
Yeah, Humanitarian Chief Tom Fletcher for the UN saying the world is watching day after day horrifying scenes of Palestinians being shot, wounded or killed in Gaza simply while trying to eat.
Mm. I mean, it's the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is just, it's just another step that I think everybody is just finding it so hard to absorb. I mean, the UN is politely calling it, you know, calling into question its neutrality. But other videos from workers online, you know, in Gaza, you know, are just describing it more viscerally in saying how this is a systematic annihilation of a people alongside a simultaneous starvation of them. Whilst, as Tabitha says, there are aid trucks lining up there and there are people eating in Michelin star restaurants just a few miles away in Israel. I mean, we're using our cross-party or our private members motion Dáil time this week coming to push for the Israeli bonds issue to be dealt with. That's an opposition co-sponsored piece. And I mean, I think everybody here in Ireland is clear. We are just tired of listening to words from this government. We need actions on occupied territories, on Israeli bonds.
Sinead, thank you. Likewise, thank you to Joe and Tabitha. That's Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent. Joe Neville, Fine Gael TD for Kildare North, and Sinead Gibney, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Rathdown. A reminder, anything you missed that you want to have a listen back to, it's all uploaded as podcasts. You can get them on the News Talk app.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.